Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got two on the field. He's got Cruz. 35-30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also follow and interact with us on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we will discuss all the necessary subjects related to the New York Giants. We'll get into the Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl draft was last night, and it turned out to be a reunion for the New York Giants, as just about everybody's going to be on Team Rice, with the exception of Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. So we'll get into that, what that means for the game on Sunday. We'll also continue to field more of your questions and comments with respect to off-season decisions that the Giants are going to have to make with respect to free agency as well as the draft. We want to remind you, fans, don't forget Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. So Eli Manning had a conference call yesterday, Anita, when you and I were on the air. And the last question...
What an appropriate time.
Yes, exactly. Timing was excellent in terms of putting it up against our show. But anyway, he was asked at his last question about whether or not he spoke to Odell Beckham and whether or not Odell Beckham was going to draft him to make sure that they would be reunited on the same team in the Pro Bowl. And Eli gave a nice sarcastic answer where he said he told Odell there was no pressure on him to take Eli Manning. However, if he didn't take him, don't expect to be catching many footballs in 2016. Well, the mystery was solved quite early. Team Irvin took Russell Wilson with the first overall
pick.
Yeah,
I think we need to discuss that as well.
That you disagree with Team Irvin, the decision, you're saying?
I can't honestly sit here and tell you with the season that Eli Manning had that I would have gone Russell Wilson over Eli Manning. I don't know if I would have.
Well, they're both great quarterbacks. Yeah. I don't think that any of them made a mistake.
So you don't have it.
I mean, it's a Pro Bowl draft here. I'm not going to go that crazy over who went first and who went second.
Look, we've got 58 more minutes on air. Well, I'm trying to stir the pot here.
Well, you can stir the pot all you want. I really didn't have an issue. Plus, I think it makes more sense for Eli Manning to play with Odell Beckham anyway. I mean, I like the fact that in the Pro Bowl you should play with your teammates. That's why Derek Carr and Amari Cooper are on the same team. They're going to be on Team Rice with Eli and with Beckham.
You have
a few teammates together. I think it makes more sense, more chemistry.
Why not throw a little spin into it?
Well, you could have made an argument that Derek Carr could have also went higher than he did. I mean, he's had a great season as well. If you look at the other quarterbacks, looking at who's on the other team with Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston and Teddy Bridgewater, all right, I mean, that's fine. You're not going to necessarily make a push for that.
What I find really interesting as well is, keep in mind, you have Odell Beckham Jr. playing with Jarvis Landry.
Correct.
So the two of them, of course, at LSU this season for NFL Countdown. I did a sit-down with Odell Beckham Jr. in regard to his friendship with Jarvis Landry before that Monday Night Football game against the Miami Dolphins, and in the two of them are as thick as thieves. I mean, beyond best friends. So I think that's really, really cool that he's going to be able to play in the Pro Bowl with Jarvis Landry. The fact that, of course, the two of them came out of the draft together, I think that's a really neat story as well.
The receiving core for the other team is quite impressive. You mentioned Landry's going to be with Beckham, so that's going to be a dynamic 1-2 punch for Eli Manning. The other team, Team Irvin's got Julio Jones, A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins, and Allen Robinson. That's quite a foursome that Russell Wilson and company are going to be working with. I mean, they did a nice job splitting the talent pool. Then the two tight ends who are going to be on Eli Manning and Beckham's team, they got Travis Kelce and Gary Barnidge, who both had impressive seasons. And the offensive linemen were split up as well as the special teamers the previous night. So Josh Brown is going to be with Eli Manning as well as Odell Beckham. Also, both Jets are going to be with all of the Giants. And then DRC was taken at the tail end when they had to divvy up some of the corners, and he wound up going with Team Irvin. So it'll be just like Giants practice. You're going to have DRC potentially going up against Odell Beckham. That's pretty much how things played out with respect to the Pro Bowl draft. It was certainly a record-breaking year for this Pro Bowl, and we went into that yesterday. 133 players were invited in some capacity. That includes all the Super Bowl players that went to the Pro Bowl that can't play because they're now obviously taking part in Super Bowl 50, in addition to all the injury replacements. And what was also interesting yesterday, Nita, I don't know if you saw, Mike McCarthy was supposed to be one of the coaches for the Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
he now
Ill.
Pulled out because of a stomach ailment.
Is that what it is? Stomach?
Yeah.
Okay.
So now you have the Packers' assistant head coach is going to take over. So it seems to have been a theme with respect to the Pro Bowl, both players and coaches dropping out left and right. But for the most part, I don't think any of the Giants are going to complain the fact that they're back together on the same team.
So in looking at the rosters, which team, who do you think drafted better? Which team do you think is going to win? If hypothetically speaking, if each team played their starters,
which
team do you think, who drafted better?
Well,
Michael
or
Jerry?
I like the offensive line for Team Irvin. I like their offensive line better. I think their receiving core has got a little bit more depth. However, I think that Team Rice has the better quarterbacks. You can certainly make the argument Team Rice has the better tight ends. And you can make the argument that Team Rice has the better defense. So, you know, it's pretty much balanced. You'd give the slight edge to Team Rice because I have more benefits with their defense, their tight ends, and their quarterbacks. But, I mean, you look at the depth chart of the wide receiver core. I mean, Team Irvin's got a lot of playmakers for Russell Wilson. I mean, it doesn't get better than A.J. Green, DeAndre Hopkins, Allen Robinson, and Julio Jones. When Robinson's your fourth wide receiver, I think you've done pretty good with your draft selections.
Absolutely. So are you going to tune in? We talked about it yesterday. Are you going to be tuned
in? Yeah, I'll definitely tune in.
Now that it's Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. who potentially will be the stars of Team Rice, now is that more? I'm curious, Giants fans. Now are you more intrigued? Now are you going to set the DVR? Are you going to tune in? Because you know Eli Manning's going to be the starting quarterback and Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry will be the two starting wide receivers.
Well,
just curious.
Here's the other thing. On Sunday night, given the fact that the Super Bowl is not until the following week, I mean, you do have some other sports going on, but what else is taking away from the Pro Bowl other than, I think, what, the NHL All-Star Game is this weekend? So it's not as if the Pro Bowl is put up against, you know, so many other quality sporting events where they got to compete. That's why if you're around on a Sunday night and you're a football fan, nobody says you got to watch this religiously, but I would figure you're probably going to tune in at one point, whether or not you have your favorite player in the game or not, because there's not many other options going on Sunday night.
Yeah, but I mean, there are a lot of good movies out. Maybe somebody hasn't seen Star Wars yet. Maybe it's date night. Maybe you want to take your significant other out.
I could say that about every other night of the week,
but
too.
But when you've got the Spurs going up against Golden State, I think somebody might want to stay home and watch that, even though it was a complete blowout. Who would have thunk? But nonetheless, yes, I get it. It's the only show in town. But is it a big enough show that you're going to plan your Sunday around it?
Well, I don't think anybody's going to plan their Sunday. But like I said, if you're around, I don't think there's anything wrong with tuning into the game. It is entertaining from the standpoint that they're going to go up and down the field like they did last year. And it was a pretty tight game last year, too. I mean, they also brought in the goalposts to make it a much narrow field goal attempt, which didn't necessarily work out in favor of Adam Vinatieri. And the rules are a little bit differently. At the end of every quarter, they then change possessions. They don't carry over like we have in the regular NFL season. So there are some different, you know, things that they add to spice up the game. But once again, I don't really think that there's a great deal of competition on Sunday night. I think most people who are football fans will at least, you know, tune in to see what happens here or there. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We will get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets throughout the duration of the program. If you want to weigh in on the Pro Bowl draft, whether or not you're going to be watching it. We also have the Senior Bowl this weekend, too. We should mention that. And it's going to be an opportunity to see some of the upcoming prospects for the draft. Let's start up the phone lines here today. And John in Jacksonville gets us going on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. John, what's happening?
How you doing, Lance? How you doing, Nita?
Doing well, welcome. John. What do you have for us?
Two things. I've been watching the Senior Bowl. And a later round draft pick, the guy to watch out for, believe it or not, is Carl Nassib. Actually, it's Ryan Nassib's brother. He looks like a good defensive end. He's quick. I've been watching him. He's been beating these guys left and right. He's got long arms. And let me tell you, even Bill Polian has been saying this guy is going to be a good help on special teams. And eventually, it looks like he's going to be a great pass rusher. He's been saying nothing but great things about him. I don't know if you noticed it or not.
Well, you're talking about, obviously, the defensive end from Penn State, who clearly,
yes,
you know, is a need for the Giants right now. They're looking to bolster that defensive line, so it would certainly meet the needs from the perspective of the team. And, you know, if you mentioned, depending on where the draft plays out and where he ultimately goes, it's, you know, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh rounders, you know, where you can really make some noise in the draft and you can add to your depth chart. So if you can find the gem, I mean, that's obviously a big difference, similar to what the Seattle Seahawks have been able to do with some of their late rounders. It helps you because then you don't have to all of a sudden go out in free agency and make up some of those voids.
I think he's going to be a steal. You could see it the way he moves. He, believe it or not, he moves like JPP. It's amazing. Long arms, pushing the tackle right off, right tackle right off with no problem. I mean, I haven't seen him play on the left end. But I'm going to watch. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch this kid, wherever he goes. But I think he's going to be interesting. And my grandson is going to the Pro Bowl. My son-in-law's taking him to the Pro Bowl, the station in Hawaii, and that's why I'm watching the Pro Bowl.
There you go. Well, that's a reason. That's some incentive. And appreciate the phone call, John. Thanks so much for weighing in. So we got one guy on the laundry list there who will be tuning in. I mean, he's got family ties. His family's going, but... That gives you some
again, incentive. I mean, I would imagine now that we've seen the Pro Bowl draft and how it all kind of panned out, I would imagine that there's a lot more excitement here in New York City and with Giants fans in regard to watching, with the fact that more than likely Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. are going to be the show.
Well, and also, if you look at history, this is the first year in quite some time that the Giants have had four representatives. You know, normally, it's been one or two over the last few years. So I think, you know, that gives you at least maybe more of a reason to tune in, especially if you're a Giants fan. You got four players on this team that are going to take part in this game. And like you said, with Eli and Odell Beckham being on the same team, you know, hopefully they'll be able to continue the chemistry from the regular season. Let's get to AJ in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, AJ.
I know the Giants need a linebacker, and I like Reggie Wiley for Alabama. Do you think he'd be a top 10 pick?
Well, I haven't seen him as a top 10 pick in terms of some of the mock drafts that have been out. You know, clearly Miles Jack is the linebacker of notice when it comes to some of the prospects that play that position. Right now, it's too early to tell. And remember, these mock drafts are going to change because we haven't had the combine yet. So I steer clear of making these bold predictions that this guy's guaranteed to go in the top 10, because a lot can happen based on what we see with respect to some of these all-star games as well as the combine, which, you know, is a big indicator.
And also, we talked about it yesterday. I mean, free agency hasn't started yet. Right now, a lot of these mock drafts, they're basing their decision or their assumption in regard to who these teams are going to draft based on need. But we know that's all going to change once the free agency doors open up. So I get it. They're fun. They're fun to look. They're fun to see. Where do people anticipate certain players to fall? But I think, you know, mock draft number one is certainly going to be very different than mock draft number seven. Right before we draft.
And there'll probably be an eighth version, too, before you know it. What else you got, AJ? Is that it?
One thing. I'll be watching the Pro Bowl on Sunday, and I'll be pulling for our team, wife.
Fair enough. It's understandable you'd be pulling for that team, considering there's plenty of Giants on that squad. And, AJ, appreciate the phone call. So we're two for two so far in terms of callers listening in to the Pro Bowl as well as watching, I should say. So that at least is a good trend. Eddie is in Charlotte as we continue to field your calls here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Eddie, what's happening?
Lance, Anita, how you doing today?
Hi.
Doing well, Eddie. What do you have for us?
I like your energy.
I got two questions about the offensive line. One is the player they signed last year from the Canadian League, Brett Jones.
Yes.
Does he have any chance to make it on as a guard on the right side this year? Or is he just another project that's going to be a couple of years away?
He's mainly been serving as the backup center dating back to training camp. They haven't really experimented with him too much at the guard position, though you could make the argument centers for the most part can play guard. And if you go back to his days in the Canadian Football League, he had some versatility there. So, I mean, making the transition, I don't think would be an overwhelming project for him. But if you're alluding to the fact that, you know, do you think he's got the potential to break into the starting lineup? Is that really what the main question is in terms of next season?
Yeah, I think, you know, between free agency and the draft, you know, they signed this guy for 3 years last year. So I'm thinking that somewhere down the line, they're going to use him.
Well, remember, depth is important, too. Keep that in mind, Eddie. Just because they sign a guy for a few years is also insurance in case somebody goes down with an injury. Case in point, you know, look at what happened to Will Beattie back in last spring. Nobody anticipated that happening, and then all of a sudden Marshall Newhouse becomes a starter. So, I mean, your depth chart is just as important as your starting unit. Right now, I wouldn't necessarily project him as a starter. I think that between Bobby Hart's emergence and perhaps what they do in free agency, you know, he's probably going to come back into the spring workouts and training camp as a backup. But if an injury happens, they're going to need a guy like that, absolutely.
Okay, question number two. You've touched on Beattie already. I believe if they cut him, there's $5 million worth of dead money. I don't see the Giants doing that. So if they keep him on the roster, do you stick him at left tackle and move Flowers over? I mean, Flowers proved that he could play the left side, or do you move Beattie to the right side?
It's a great question. There's a few things here. And number one is, you know, this is a very young, exciting offensive line for the Giants moving forward, and I believe the vision right now is Flowers at left, next to Pugh, and then Richburg. Now you've got three solid, young, exciting, talented guys that are the future of that offensive line. Do you really want to mess with that? I don't think you do. Then I envision Bobby Hart, if he could pick up where he left off last year, having him play that right guard position. Then not sure what you do with Jeff Schwartz. And in regard to Will Beattie, you know, I don't – is he willing to move over to right tackle? You know, there's some guys that don't play a certain tackle position better than the other. I don't know, and I apologize for not knowing. I mean, I'm sure that Paul Dottino would have better insight on this than I do, and that is, you know, what is Beattie's skill set in regard to playing right tackle as opposed to left tackle?
And plus, do you want to pay him $6 million to play right tackle?
Well, remember, they got a lot of financial flexibility. I wouldn't get overwhelmed with the money from that perspective. I think you got to look at who your best combination of five players is, Eddie, when it comes to putting out your offensive line. That's how most teams usually look at it. You can't necessarily worry about the finances. If Will Beattie is one of your five best offensive linemen, you're going to find a way to put him out on the field. I mean, in terms of seeing his strengths, to me, and this is just my individual opinion, I look at Beattie more of a left tackle guy than a right tackle guy. I think Eric Flowers is more of the mauler who can make the transition to right tackle, and it's not really going to be much of a transition because he's had experience.
And I totally agree with you. But again, what I find interesting is you want to start developing that left side because obviously that's your blind side. That's your most important side. So is it more detrimental to move Flowers to right tackle and when really you're trying to build the chemistry of these three guys on the left side of your line? I don't know.
Correct.
And another thing is Will Beattie open to playing right tackle? You know, we don't know that either. So, you know, there are a lot of question marks here. There really are.
Well, that's why you hope that Beattie can return for the spring. And Eddie, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. So that if he's ready to go health-wise in the spring, that they can at least determine what they want to do. And if they do want to move him to right tackle, he can then have the entire duration of the spring to get acclimated to that position. You know, you want to do these things much earlier in the offseason than waiting till training camp to all of a sudden get that group to mesh. Because, you know, as you mentioned, you did have pretty much a full season where you were able to work Flowers, Pugh, and Richburg in terms of that left side combination. You certainly want to continue to build off of that when you have a young nucleus together as opposed to now breaking up the young nucleus. It's always good to have options. That's the key. But you want to start getting some clarity earlier rather than later when it comes to determining the breakdown of the Giants' offensive line. Let's go to Brandon in New Jersey. Brandon, what's happening?
What's going on, man?
How we doing, Brandon?
This is what I would do. I would leave the left side how it is because we, like you said, Eric Flowers already had proven that he could play the left side, the left tackle position. I don't think you want to move him in his second year when he played almost 16 games there. You got the left side figured out. You got Flowers, Pugh, Richburg at center. I will put Hart in at the right guard position. And the way Beattie was sounding, I don't think he wants to play the right side because in the interview that y'all put on Giants.com, he said he had the vision of coming back of playing the left side.
He did. No, you're 100% right, Brandon. In that interview at the end of the season, he made it clear He said that when he comes back in the spring, his mindset is the left tackle job is his, and he's going to fight his way to reclaim that job. That's basically, and I'm paraphrasing his words, but you're 100% right.
Right. You don't want that mindset on, and you don't want them going into, you know, any confusion. I believe the Giants should move on from Will Beatty, in my opinion, and draft a right tackle, or because I don't want to bring in another veteran right tackle. You've seen what Marshall did. He did a solid job, but at the same time, it wasn't good enough. So to keep the young nucleus going, I would draft a young right tackle that's a mauler.
I just wanted to add real quickly, the other thing to keep in mind, you know, Bobby Hart, I would not rule him out at right tackle. Bobby Hart's played both positions, guard and tackle, so he could be an option at the right tackle, which would appease to what you're saying, where you'd rather have a younger guy on the outside as opposed to bringing in another veteran. So, you know, don't rule out that possibility as the offseason plays out.
David Dill said he's a better guard than a tackle. I think I agree, too. Even though he could play both positions, but I will put him in the position where he's more comfortable. That's the thing the Giants have to learn. You have to play people in positions where they're comfortable. That's why Jeff Schwartz got hurt last year, because they kept on moving him around. If you would have kept him at the right guard position for all games, you never know what it came up. You know, they wanted to move him to the left guard. They wanted to move him to right tackle. You know, just leave him at right guard. Now Schwartz is all caught up in the mix, and now he's a backup because Hart proven that he could play the right guard position. Now, my other point before you cut me off or whatever, do you think Devin Kennard could play the middle linebacker position? Because the guy that they were saying in the first round, I forgot his name, the top linebacker, he's more of a will linebacker than anything. That's what they're saying. They say he could play the middle, but they don't know for sure. So do you think Devin Kennard could play the middle linebacker? And another thing I want to know is Eric Berry, is he a free safety? Is Eric Berry a free safety? Because I know he's going to be a free agent.
Correct, for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
Does he play free safety?
I believe so.
I think Eric Berry, to be honest with you, if you brought him in, he's got the skill set, regardless of how Kansas City used him, and he could play either position. And keep this in mind. Here's another thing that Spags said, and appreciate the phone call, Brandon. Thanks so much for weighing in. Spags mentioned at the beginning of the season that the way the Giants operate on defense, they don't look at it as strong safety and free safety. They look at it as a guy who plays on the right side and a guy that plays on the left side when they at least evaluate some of their safeties and so forth. Now, take that for what it's worth. You still need some versatility back there, I would agree, but they don't necessarily classify their safeties here under Spags as a strong safety and a full safety. It's more about the side.
They don't, but one thing that we have seen in regard to Landon Collins is if you want to really label him as something, he's more of a box safety. He's better with tackling. He's better with stopping the run than in coverage. That's why I really think it's going to be intriguing to see if in the next few years that the Giants transition him into a linebacker as opposed to a safety. Not sure, just throwing it out there, food for thought. So if you are going to go out and you're going to bring in any type of safety to complement this defense, it's going to be more of a free safety style player who's better at coverage than anything else.
Well,
so I, you're absolutely right in regard to what the Giants communicate, but in regard to what the Giants need in talent, I think it's more of a free safety style of player than a strong safety style of player.
Well, based on how the Chiefs have used Berry, and, you know, he's mainly listed as a strong safety if you look up, obviously, all of his profiles, but they've dropped him back in coverage all throughout the course of this season. So Berry's the type of guy that they bring him back into the box, and they also put him back in coverage. That's why I said I think he's got the skill set, regardless of how Kansas City used him, that you put him in a system, he's got enough versatility where he can play on the back end, he can also come down in the box.
I mean, there are a number of guys who can do that. You know, another thing to keep in mind is the number of injuries to guys that really the Giants anticipated to be starters at the safety position here. And hopefully those guys, Burhe and Jackson, and hopefully these guys will be back on the team. I don't know what their contract situation is. And an opportunity to really compete and help solidify that secondary. You know, we really haven't, we really haven't talked about them in a long time.
Well,
and a big reason
up,
why,
yeah.
Because they got injured, and they got injured earlier on in the season. And to be honest with you, really haven't seen them around the facility that much. So, you know, just keep that in mind. I mean, there is some talent with some of these players in the secondary for the Giants. And if healthy, next season is going to be in line to compete for some playing time.
Well, the counter to that point would be, which a lot of Giants fans have brought up, there is a track record, though, with some of those players in terms of injuries. Bennett Jackson's been banged up during the course of his career. Same thing with Nat Burhe. So, you know, the if in front of healthy is a big if. So even if you're anticipating them coming back, similar to the Victor Cruz conversation, the at least priority for this offseason is depth. Other options, it's great to have those options, but in case they don't pan out in the injury department, or the health department, I should say, you at least have somebody else that you know has somewhat of a stronger track record staying healthy and staying on the field. So I think that's the theme this offseason. You want to bring back all the guys that were banged up, but at the same time, you want to make sure you have that insurance policy in place that just in case they do get banged up again, you'll have some other options to turn to. So, Dave, we have Brandon back on the line. He wants to say another word or two. All right, Brandon, real quick here.
All right. The whole thing with the Eric Berry situation, because y'all was saying the Giants should make two big splash defensive players. I believe Malik Jackson from Denver is going to be a free agent as well.
You're right.
The guy with the defensive line. I will bring in Eric Berry and Malik Jackson. Those are big two key components that I will bring in as big-time free agents. And then fill out the rest of the defensive roster in the draft and get a couple of, probably maybe two defensive linemen out and free agency and draft another two in the draft and bring in a free agent corner and draft another corner. And you see what I'm saying? In the draft as well. But the two big ones, I would do Eric Berry and Malik Jackson. Thank you.
Well, Eric Berry's one of the top safeties out there, so he's, I'm sure, going to get a lot of interest. And remember, you know, don't cancel out the fact that he may want to return to Kansas City. Remember, the team that player plays for usually has an edge because they can at least communicate with that player leading up to free agency. With respect to Denver, you threw out Malik Jackson. The Broncos are going to have a lot of tough decisions to make because they've got Danny Trevathan's a free agent, Von Miller's a free agent. Be very interested to see who they're able to retain and who they ultimately have to part ways with. Plus, Peyton Manning's future, too. Does that give them a little bit more cap space and so forth? Denver's going to be a very intriguing team to watch because of so many free agents on that squad. Let's head back to the phone lines here. We got Chris in Virginia. Chris, what's happening?
Hey, how y'all doing, man? It's
doing
been a while since I called in. If I go free agency, top of the list, we got to get Vaughn Miller in here, man. I'm just saying that. I mean, that guy's got – we got to get back to the pass rushing. We got to do it. Y'all know it. I know it. Everybody knows it.
I think 31 other teams are also – I didn't mean to cut you off. I said I think 31 other teams are saying the same thing as you just said in terms of wanting Von
sure
Miller on their squad.
No question. But 31 other teams, I don't think they have the space that we got this year. You know what I'm saying?
Well, there's a number of teams that are going to have cap space this year. There's a number of teams that are going to certainly be in the running. But the Giants are in a good position. I would certainly agree with that.
And I don't think KC is gonna let go of Berry. I don't see that happening. But I wanted to congratulate Coach McAdoo. I'm okay with that. I was thinking if we were gonna go for coordinators, we should just stay in house. You know, unless we were gonna make a move for a big fish. You know, Cowher. Y'all talked about that at length. He's not interested, and a few other guys out there, older coaches who seem to be pretty comfortable with what they're doing now. Also, I think we got to get, you know, stop bringing in second-tier guys, stop bringing in cast-offs from other teams, you know what I'm saying, backup guys. At some point, we got to get back to – I know we don't usually spend a lot of money in free agency. That's not the Giant way. You know, we like to build through the draft, and I get that. We got some ground to make up with some of these draft picks that we missed on in previous years. I know the offensive line is pretty much panned out. In my opinion, I know a lot of people bellyache about the offensive line. I didn't think they were terrible this year. And I think if we can get Beatty back in any capacity, that would be an asset. Whether he wants to play right side or not, you know, they'll figure that out. But just the last thing you know, free agency, man. Who do you guys think we got a real shot at as far as, you know, not throwing a whole bunch of money at the problems, but just to say, you know, here's a guy we can plug in here or plug in there, you know, just to work with, you know, the fragile nucleus that we already have, and I'll take that off the air. Thanks.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much, Chris.
I printed this list. This is a list of the top 20 unrestricted free agents that NFL.com put out. Von Miller is number one. But yeah, I mean, the question mark is what, as we know, he's about to play in the Super Bowl for the Denver Broncos. What do the Broncos throw his way? What will his market value be? I mean, if the NFL Network and NFL.com has him as the number one unrestricted free agent, you've got to assume that that's gonna cost a hefty price. Josh Norman, I think he stays in Carolina. I mean, he's like, what, he played high school, college, and professional football in Carolina. I think he stays in Carolina. I think he likes to be there. I think he likes playing for Ron Rivera. I think Carolina is going to be a force for the next few years. Why would he go anywhere? Muhammad Wilkerson, he's coming off of injury. That's going to be a big question mark. They have him listed as number three. But how much money do you invest in a player who you don't know if he's going to be 100% going into next season? Alshon Jeffrey is number four, wide receiver. You look at the Giants' wide receiving core, and granted, yes, the offense was successful and explosive and was able to put up a fair amount of points, but you've got some question marks about Victor Cruz. Will Victor Cruz ever be that vintage Victor Cruz because of the knee and the calf issues that he's facing? Does this offense need another stud wide receiver to play opposite Odell Beckham Jr., moving forward? That's a big question mark. Reuben Randall, he's an unrestricted free agent. Is he back on the squad next year? JPP's on here. Eric Berry is on here. Malik Jackson, who, wow, so impressive last week against the Patriots. Vernon from the Dolphins is on here. Bruce Irvin from the Seattle Seahawks is on here.
It looks like he wants to re-sign with Seattle the last time he spoke publicly.
Just to share with you again some of the top unrestricted free agents that are out there. But again, like until free agency opens up, and you got Adam Schefter and Mort and all these guys that are out there tweeting and kind of sharing what's going on behind closed doors and our team's going to ante up for the price tags that really are going to come with a hefty price for these top 10, top 15 free agents, you just don't know.
Well, I think the other thing to take into consideration when you're looking at free agents is also the age factor. If you're going to bring in a guy, you want to bring in a guy that you think can be with you for the next, let's say, 4 or 5 years, and he hasn't necessarily hit his ceiling. So, for example, if you look at the defensive ends, I was looking over some of the names over the last few days, and you look at the age factor, Malik Jackson's been thrown out a lot by a number of the callers. He's 26 years old. That's appealing because at 26, you feel, he still has room for growth over the course of that contract. Another player that I think is also somewhat interesting at the defensive end position is Mike DeVito, who plays for Kansas City. He's also a relatively young guy. You got to look at it from that perspective, too, as opposed to, bringing in, let's say, a 32 or a 33-year-old. For example, you look at the Dallas Cowboys, and the Cowboys, I think they have a few defensive linemen that are going to be on the market. And, clearly there's that appeal because they're within the division. But you got to consider the age factor and whether or not, that's something that's going to provide some strength to the team and so forth. I'm trying to bring up the laundry list here. There was one player in particular who has had a good season that I think could get some interest, but obviously his age is going to be a problem when you look at how the free agent market plays out. Jeremy Mincy, that was the guy that I was thinking of. 32 years old, coming off a very productive season, but 32 versus 26, there's pros and cons to signing a guy who's up there in that age.
And also, keep in mind, every team's story is different, right? Like Jared Allen, for example, going to Carolina. You know what I mean? He's up there in age, but maybe Carolina brought him in because they needed that quick plug, that quick fix. He wants to win a Super Bowl. He felt like this was his best opportunity to win a Super Bowl. Let me go to Carolina. Who knows? Maybe he took less money to go to Carolina because he felt like, wow, they're in a position that maybe this is the best chance, the best opportunity for me to win a Super Bowl. So, you got to look at every, in my opinion, when a player is contemplating free agency and where to go and obviously, money is the biggest deciding factor. You see that time and time again. But also, I think you have certain players that might take less money to go to this team because, like what we saw with Randy Moss the year with the Patriots. You know, you might see a player that might take less money to go to this team because they have a hole here, they need a quick fix, they need a plug, and you know what? I know that I can compliment this team, and this team's going to give me the best opportunity to win a Super Bowl. And they might be up in age. But, you know, I think everybody's storyline is different. But I think you're right. I think it would be advantageous for the Giants to look at younger talent, because I think it's going to be a process here. I do.
And a lot will also depend on Prince, JPP, and Robert Ayers, because, you know, if one of them leaves, you know, then you're not necessarily going to want to bring in a guy who you can plug in for a year or two. You're going to want to bring in a guy who could be a cornerstone for the franchise moving forward, a young guy in that 26-year to 29-year-old barometer. Let's head back to the lines. Steve's in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, what's happening? Happy New Year.
Same to you,
Long
Steve.
Time.
You too.
I haven't heard from you in quite some time.
Listen, guys, I wanted to make a little bit of opinion out there, then I was going to just close out a couple of questions and listen to you guys' comments off air. First one I feel most strongly about is, you know, I just keep hearing everybody talking about, you know, keeping Flowers, including you guys, keeping Flowers on the left-hand side. And here's my argument against that. And, I mean, I just can't even tell you how strongly I disagree with the assessment of the situation. Because first of all, you got to look at it for what it is. We brought Flowers in here to play the right-hand side, correct? And we were going to keep Beatty on the left.
Well, in terms of the short term, that may have been the plan. But I think ultimately, Eric Flowers, long term, had always been viewed as potentially a left tackle who could be on that end for years to come.
I got you. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's expected, you know, seeing where he was in the draft and the position he plays. You would like to think that any tackle, you know, taking that high can eventually go over to the left-hand side. But here's the thing. You know, up until the injury, Beatty was playing very well. He earned himself a second contract. He never fell out of top three as far as pro football focus. The last year he was healthy. I happen to be one of those people who, you know, old school believes, you know, really lose your job to injury. And most importantly, you compete for your job. And that was the one thing I heard Beatty made clear. He plans on coming back and taking his job back. I really don't care who earns the job, but I do believe Beatty is a better, way better left tackle than Flowers is right now. I also like the attitude to the blocking type. I think that Flowers is more of a mauler. He has, you know, he needs some more experience to be a little more on the left inside, on the left-hand side, if we can afford to give him the experience. I think having Beatty back healthy, given the contract he'd be playing under at a left tackle, at the level I think he's capable of playing at, to me, it's a no-brainer. I don't really see why we would, you know, rush this kid when we got a left tackle. You know, we got a kid from Florida State. We, God forbid, something would have happened on the right. You know, I just don't get it why. You know, I just don't get why everybody's so quick to want to cut this man after earning a second contract. If he's healthy, I just hope that the team doesn't just give the job to Flowers and that they actually make him compete. That's really all I can say about that. But, the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, the running backs. I agree with you, Nanita. I mean, being a little bit more critical, I'm just not happy with the way we use our running backs. Nobody's saying that. I mean, not just to having the four-man rotation. That's one thing. But the play calling, the run, scheme as far as the blocking is concerned, I don't like any of it, just to be, completely frank. So I'm hoping to see some changes. I'm hoping McAdoo have learned with experience. I'm not really pleased with his play calling, but I am happy to have a younger coach in here because I think that's the biggest thing this team needs is an identity. You know, I don't remember being seeing a Giants team without an identity. And I've been a fan, since 76. So I think, having a good mixture of young guys and veterans is really the best way to get the identity because you do need a couple veterans in there to, help form it and keep these guys, disciplined and on the same page. So, I'm all for the young movement, but you certainly need the veterans. And I think having, Coughlin now removed will enable us to have a new identity and I hope a little bit more aggressive and, as far as runners, you know, I'd rather just stay with Jennings. Darqua came in. He, you know, he did a good times, but he could be a flash in the pan. He hasn't shown the workhorse and the little touches he got hurt. So everybody wants to throw Jennings and Williams under the bus, which is, I think, I just totally disagree with it. So that's all I had, guys. But I really wanted to know what you think about what was the, you know, the rumors about Singletary possibly coming in here, and where does Ryan Nap stand on his contract? So I appreciate you letting me chime in, and I'll listen to your comments off there.
Thank you.
All right, Steve, appreciate the phone call.
The one thing that stuck out in that conversation was identity. And I find it interesting because can you define what the identity is of this Giants team last year? How would you define the identity?
Well, I would say the offense was the identity of this team.
Okay.
That's what I would say. I would say Odell Beckham was a big part of that identity. The big play capability of Odell Beckham, the flashes that they showed in terms of the passing game, you know, that was the main identity of this team. The running game was very up and down. Now, the defense was up and down. You know, special teams provided some plays here or there, but the main identity was Eli Manning and Odell Beckham.
So the identity of this team was offensive explosion with Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. That was the identity of this team.
I mean, I think that's a fair way to sum up the 16 games this past season.
And so here's my second question to that is, how does a head coach affect the identity of a team when because the reason that the offense was so explosive is because you've got obviously Odell Beckham Jr. that's just such an immense talent, Eli Manning who's a top tier quarterback in the NFL, and they had to put up all these points to be able to try to stay in games and win games, and really a lack of a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. And of course we heard Jerry Reese and John Mara allude to that. They mention that in the end of the season press conference. So with that being said, a lot of your identity as a team is created because of who you have in that locker room and the talent you have on that ball club. I think there's very few teams out there whose identity is created by a head coach. Very few.
Well, the other thing to keep in mind, if you want to go with the thought process of the team takes on the personality, maybe, as opposed to the identity of the head coach. I mean, McAdoo, his personality has been embedded into this team, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And I don't expect the offense to change drastically, given the fact that, you know, Eli Manning wants to continue, as well as Odell Beckham, what they've been working on for the last 2 years. So in terms of maybe the aggressive approach that Steve was talking about, you know, I'm sure McAdoo's going to have his own wrinkles, his own decisions in terms of how to handle certain downs, handle certain critical situations in quarters. Listen, every coach wants to put his own identity, his own stamp on the team, but from an offensive philosophy standpoint, I would not expect them to go from one end of the spectrum to the other, considering McAdoo was a big piece and a big part of the success they've had on offense the last 2 years. Let's not forget about that. I mean, they did promote somebody internally.
Oh, I understand that, but when I hear the word identity, like I'm now going around the league. I'm thinking about the other 31 teams, and I'm trying to say, okay, well, which head coach, maybe Ron Rivera, in regard to, you know, what he brings onto the defensive side of the ball and the way that he coaches and but he's such a bigger personality, let's say, than Ben McAdoo is. It's food for thought. I'm just throwing it out there in regard to how does a team's identity get created, and how many teams out there are the head coaches a part of creating that identity?
Well, I think Rex Ryan's a good example.
Yes.
I think Rex Ryan is a good example because Rex Ryan is a very loose type of head coach, and they were up there in terms of penalties this season because he doesn't necessarily, you know, try to make sure that the team is on the same page and promoting well-disciplined type of football and so forth. So you could say his free style is reflective in terms of their style of play on the field. So I think there's some stronger examples than others. I would agree with you. You know, if you look at trying to think of some other coaches, Bruce Arians, the Arizona Cardinals, you know, a very aggressive-minded coach. And if you look at how they've played football, both on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, I would say they took on some of the principles and the identity of the head coach. You know, Ron Rivera is a guy that's got a mixture of discipline, but he's also somebody that backs off his team and allows them to be flexible. So I could see a little bit of his personality in the team. I don't think it's as clear for all 32 teams, I would agree with you, but there is definitely a few hardcore examples where the way the coach speaks, what the coach preaches, definitely translates to what is put on the field in terms of the product. The other question, by the way, that Steve asked was Ryan Nassib's contract. So Ryan Nassib has 1 year left on his deal. He's going to be a free agent in 2017. So he's entering the final year of his contract. That's his contractual status.
And let me just say, that's going to be interesting because I'm a big Ryan Nassib fan. And I think, you know, look around the league, look at all the 32 teams and look at the backup quarterbacks where, let's say, the starting quarterback does go down. That backup quarterback steps in. And you are even somewhat confident that the team is not going to miss a beat offensively. You Giants fans should be confident in regard to Ryan Nassib. Ryan Nassib runs this offense extremely well. Extremely well. This offense fits him to a T. So that's and you know, we've heard Eli Manning say, like, you know, he feels that he could play another 5 years. Does Nassib ride the pine for? Does he sign another deal? Does he ride the pine? Does he wait his turn in regard to when Eli is ready to call it quits? Or, you know, does he hopefully want to go out there and compete for a starting job on another roster? That's going to be really intriguing to me because it's the backup quarterback position I don't think is discussed enough. And I think it's so important, especially this day and age in the NFL where there's so many injuries. I mean, look how many quarterbacks went down this year. And the next quarterback that came up, you were kind of like, oh, team doesn't even have a chance now. I don't have that feeling here with the Giants when it comes to Nassib. I really don't.
Well, the other luxury is Eli Manning and durability go hand in
hand. Absolutely.
I mean, nobody has been more tougher in terms of playing in the NFL than Eli Manning. So I think that's been a very strong luxury that the Giants have relied on. That doesn't mean that the backup quarterback here is not important compared to other teams. A lot's going to depend on if there's a team that has a great deal of interest in Ryan Nassib. And, you know, if they offer Nassib an opportunity, hey, come in. You know, we're thinking you got a legitimate shot of becoming a starting quarterback. That's something he's got to weigh. I mean, I'm sure the Giants are going to want to bring him back, you know, if he's willing to take on another contract. But, you know, the other opportunities may present themselves and may be more appealing.
What was the time? How long did Aaron Rodgers sit behind Brett Favre? Do you know how long
it was?
That
at
was?
Least a good 3 years, I want to say. Maybe 3 years, okay. Off the top of my head. I'm not exactly sure of the math. I could look up when Aaron Rodgers came in. I know Brett Favre was 2 years. He came in the year after the NFC Championship game between the Giants and the Packers. So there we go.
So 3 years.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I had assumed in terms of the mathematics. And it benefited him tremendously because he learned from a veteran quarterback. He came in. It was a smooth transition. That's how every team would love to do it, where you have that guy you draft. He learns from the veteran. See, it's not going to hurt Ryan Nassib from being behind Eli Manning all these years. No matter where he gets his shot, whether it be with the Giants, whether it be somewhere else, I don't think Ryan Nassib is going to look back and say, wow, you know, sitting behind Eli Manning was a real big waste of my time. I think in the long run, it's only going to help him become a better quarterback.
Absolutely not. And another thing, keep in mind, you know, and this is a compliment for Eli Manning. There's not a lot of starting quarterbacks out there that really care about the backup quarterback, whether he was young, drafted by the team. You know, Eli Manning's been a mentor for Ryan Nassib. You know, in fact, I mean, let's use that Green Bay analogy again. When Green Bay went out and drafted Aaron Rodgers, even Brett Favre came out publicly and said, listen, I'm not here to mentor this kid. This is my job. My job is to play football. My job is not to mentor a young kid to eventually take over my position. I'm not doing that. You know, and that kind of rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. Obviously, it was a very selfish kind of statement in regard to looking out for himself and not looking out for the organization. But now look how it's turned out. But you know, there are very few guys out there that, as starting quarterbacks, play that mentoring role and that leadership role for whoever the backup quarterback is. And Eli Manning has been that plus for Ryan Nassib. So you're absolutely right. I mean, whether Nassib is here or not, his time and his tenure with Eli Manning, I'm sure, is going to go a long way regardless of what happens in his career.
Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Kevin is in Florida. Kevin, what's happening?
Good afternoon. Well, I talk about the draft. You know, the way I'm seeing this is there's no way that at the 10 spot, if one of the major playmakers on offense is still available to the Giants, I think they have to take him. I think when you look at Odell Beckham, is he really the only other than the quarterback? How he put up those numbers with just Beckham and a bunch of really very, very mediocre and average, you know, players in the ball handling positions. But I know that McAdoo was in Green Bay, and he had Jordy Nelson on one side and Randall Cobb on the other, and I don't think he sees somebody in Beckham's league. So if I were the Giants, and if the wide receiver from Mississippi, Treadwell, was available at 10, I'd jump all over him. I think he would create matchup nightmares for Philadelphia and Dallas and Washington. It would also force Odell Beckham to get less multiple coverages. And if Ty could just continue to do what he did last year, I think that would, and with the way Manning can pass, that may well be the top passing offense in the league. I don't think he'll be available at 10, but if he is, I think you have to jump all over him. But the other thing I would do is I'd jump on a running back Elliott if he wasn't available, because if you have a very, very good running back, like Minnesota went to the playoffs with basically Adrian Peterson with Christian Ponder and nobody catching the ball, if the Giants believe that Elliott has the ability to be a spectacular back, I think, and Treadwell's not available, I think they have to take him. I can tell you for certain, in the second round and in the third round, there'll be very good defensive players available. I think Shaq Lawson, among others, will be available in the second round. And I think McAdoo, I think, probably understands this. He has one guy that can beat you in Beckham and a bunch of guys that can hurt you a little bit, but individually are not going to beat you. And people are going to look at the tape in a Minnesota game when Beckham didn't play and say that these other guys aren't going to beat us. They'll hurt us a little bit, but they're not going to beat us. And I'm kind of hoping Reese looks at it that way. What do you guys think?
Well, I think you look at this season as a whole, and you know, you've been promoting offense in a lot of the players that you threw out, but I don't think you could overlook the fact that you're coming off a season where you had the 32nd ranked defense. And if there is a impactful player at number 10 who you think could come in, be a starter on day one for your defense, whether it's a secondary player, a defensive lineman, a linebacker, it's going to be hard to overlook that type of an impactful player too. Because, you know, the offense, even with some of the things you brought up about the fact that when they had some guys down with injuries, you know, they had some issues in terms of the running game. And I would agree with all your points, but at the same time, the defensive struggles was a common theme all year long. And even with the Giants up there in points per game this year, they were up there. You know, they were a top 10 offense in that department. The defense was on the field more often than not in late game situations, and it was the defense that couldn't make a stop. So when I evaluate this season, I think the defense is where you want to bring in those impactful players, more so than worrying about adding another running back when you already have three under contract or adding another wide receiver in the first round.
Just to share with you in regard to, I have one of the mock drafts up, and in looking at the offensive players, okay, and not paying attention to the quarterbacks, because I think Cleveland does take a quarterback at two. But just looking at Treadwell, anticipating to go to San Francisco at 7, and that's really it. The ones that they're anticipating prior to the Giants drafting at 10 are defensive linemen, offensive linemen, corners. Ezekiel Elliott, not anticipating to go until, further down here. So at 18. With the Indianapolis Colts, there is the chance, there is the possibility that he might be on the board, but what did we hear again? I keep on going back to the end of the season press conference with Jerry Reese and John Mara, and they talked defense, that there's so many holes on the defensive side of the ball that has to be the priority for them going into this draft and going into free agency, right?
I agree. I agree,
except to say two things. Number one, if you have a stud running back, he's going to keep the Giants' defense on the sidelines because he's going to be churning out first downs for you, which the Giant running game did not do this year, except a little bit at the end when Jennings got hot for the last two or three games. And the other consideration is I don't think there's any one player in the draft. Lawrence Taylor is not there this year. I think there's some good players, but I don't think there's any one guy that's going to come in here and turn the defense around. But there's a very bunch of good ones. I would say that the second round through the seventh, you could draft all defensive players. But I just think that they need another, you know, they need another another ball handler guy who scares defenses. And they only have one in Beckham. And the rest of them are guys that, well, they're going to ding us up a little bit, but they're not going to beat us. And I think they could use that. And if there's a guy down there, because they don't think that highly of Elliott, I wouldn't draft him. But from everything I hear, that you know, he looks like he's probably the best runner. There's another runner out there, but he's not a first-round guy. It's Collins from Arkansas. But he's more of a third-round guy. And, you know, you might take a flyer on him if you're looking for another back. But I think they do need a back that can control the clock, control the line of scrimmage, can churn out first downs, you know. And they didn't have that last year. And I think that doesn't help the defense. There were too many three and outs. And I don't want, you know, the defense had their own problems, but you can't be, you know, on the field too much and expect good things to happen over a long period of time. So.
Well, appreciate the phone call, and thanks so much for weighing in. I mean, make the point, Kevin, that I think it was more than just perhaps the personnel in the backfield as to why they struggled on the ground. So, you know, using that logic to say, well, we bring in Ezekiel Elliott and we just plug him in and then everything's going to be wonderful with the running game, I don't think it's that simple. Just like I would say, you're right, it's going to take more than just one defensive player to come in here and all of a sudden things turn around. It's going to take a group effort. And going back to what you were touching on, Anita, John Mara's quote was, we're lacking championship-caliber players on defense. That was his exact phrase. He didn't say we're lacking one. He was alluding to the fact that they need a number of players to add to the depth chart. So if you could get a number of defensive players through the draft, depending on what happens in free agency, you know, that's a big step in the right direction. It's going to take more than just one player. And I would say the same thing in terms of the running game. It's going to take an offensive line staying healthy. It's going to take better production from the tight ends in the blocking schemes, the use of the fullback. And then on top of that, you know, the decision-making of the running backs. Jennings proved in the latter stages of this season, he can be a workhorse. He proved that down the stretch of the season. You would just like to see more consistency in that department, and they have a guy like Shane Vereen who could catch the ball out of the backfield. So, once again, I think there's enough versatility in this backfield. As long as everything can click, there's no reason why they can't show more semblance of consistency over the course of 16 games.
Yeah, and in this backfield, when you look across really all the needs on this team, the backfield to me is really low on the totem pole, right? I mean, in regards to the needs, but then you go back to the philosophy of what the Giants have done time and time again, and it's best player on the board. It's like I keep on saying. I mean, this is going to be a really fun offseason. The next few months are going to be really fun when free agency opens. Who do the Giants go after? You know, what does this roster look like right before the draft? And then this topic of conversation, I think, is going to change immensely.
Last time the Giants took a running back in the first round was 2012. That was when they took David Wilson. That was the 32nd overall pick, keep in mind. It wasn't necessarily a top 10 pick from that perspective. And then prior to David Wilson,
keep in mind, that draft, I want to say Tampa took Doug Martin.
Yeah.
What, a pick or two before, right?
Correct.
But a lot of people were anticipating that Doug Martin would have been a better fit for the Giants and the offense that they were running at that time.
I'm trying to find the last time prior to David Wilson that a running back went in the first round to the Giants. And I am continuing to scroll through this. Ron Dane, you'd then have to go back to in 2000, the 11th overall pick. Last time the Giants took a running back in that top 10 barometer would be Ron Dane, which is well over a decade. So, I mean, you got to look at some of the trends. Not that trends are not meant to be broken, but it is rare for a running back to go to the Giants that high. It's rare for a running back in general to go that high based on what we've seen in recent trends in the draft, because a lot of teams are saying to themselves, you know what, we'll take a running back in the second round. The injury rate is so high, it's just not worth the risk. Let's hear from Andre in Rochester. Andre, what's happening?
Going on.
How we doing, Andre?
I'm doing great. I had to disagree with the last caller just because our defense was so much dismantled last year. I think I'll take my first round. I'll try to at least try to move up and get my hands on MJ, you know, Miles Jack. He looks like crazy horse right there.
I just don't know if he's going to fall to 10. That's the big question mark.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Hopefully they can make some moves to get him early, if that's even possible.
Well, but if there's a team that wants him higher up, there's no guarantee they're going to switch positions. That's the key.
Yeah, I want to play GM real quick, and I want to I definitely want to move Landry Collins up in the box. I think that's the place where he needs to be at, either the left or the right. He'll be great. You keep Beeson in the middle, and you draft Miles Jack. You got your three linebackers right there. And I'll take your comments off air. Thanks, guys, for having me.
Appreciate the phone call, Audrey.
You know, another thing to keep an eye on, and that is because there are so many holes to fill on the defensive side of the ball, is this a year that maybe the Giants trade down? I know there's a lot of talk about them trading up, but is this a year that maybe they trade down to get more value picks on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I go back to the premise, and I think I brought this up yesterday. The number of picks is not what's important. It's the substance of the pick. So if you're of the mindset, well, they lost out on a pick because they traded for Brad Wing, so they got to get back another seventh-round pick or something, my argument is that's fine. If volume is important, then, hey, volume's important. To me, it's the substance. It's not the volume. So if you're a 10, and usually, more often than not, based on the history of the draft, if you have a top 10 pick, you should be able to get a quality player in the top 10 selection. So I don't know if there's that much of a benefit to swapping out of that 10th selection.
Well, also, I mean, you really got to take a look and see where is the each and every year when you talk about a draft, you talk about where's the depth in this draft. What was it? I don't want to say last year, but the year before last year, right? There was a lot of depth at the offensive line position. Like every year, it's typically different, and there's more depth at one position than the other. So, you know, where is there more quality athleticism in players coming out this year on the defensive side of the ball or on the offensive side of the ball? That's, you know, that's another thing is really got to do a little bit more research. And I'm talking about myself in regard to really finding out where is the depth here? Where is the depth of the guys that are coming out?
Well, I think there's more depth on defense this year. Certainly, this is not a quarterback draft, I'll tell you that. I mean, we're not going to see a string of about 15 quarterbacks going in round number one. That will not happen. Defense, I think, is where the quality is right now in this draft. A lot can change based on combine, you know, measurements, people go crazy. But I would say this is a defensive draft in my mind. We saw wide receivers over the last few years. We've seen quarterbacks, saw a little depth at running back. But this, to me, there's some defensive guys that I think can make some noise, which is good news for the Giants, especially if that's the direction that they want to go in. But you could say, well, if there's defensive depth, then that's more of a reason where maybe you don't have to go for a guy at number 10. But I would say at number 10, though, you could still get, though, one of the top-tier defensive players, and then you can even get more quality as you go down into the second and the third rounds. So that's going to be something that clearly you have to take into consideration. But I'm a guy, it's more about substance than volume. And I've heard a lot of people say, you know, well, they have one less draft pick, so it's more important to get the extra draft pick. All depends on what you do with that extra draft pick. And if I can get something quality at number 10, why am I going to be worried about dropping down so I can get an extra draft selection in the seventh round or something like that? I just don't see that as a smart trade-off there. But, you know, everybody obviously is entitled to their opinion, and I'm sure the debate will ensue as we move along here during the offseason. Certainly appreciate everybody weighing in on the phone lines. We'll get to some of your tweets off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live continues each and every weekday here on Giants.com at noon Eastern. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.